Final hour is upon us. Welcome back. 104.5 The Zone. We're happy to have you guys along for the ride. Hope you're having a fantastic Wednesday. 615-737-1045 is the number. 615-737-1045. Your thoughts, your questions, your comments, your concerns. You can do it all on the phone lines if you so choose. We're going to talk about what to look for today at Titans practice. Been a while since they've been on the practice field. Been a while since you've had a look at this team as it's supposed to be constructed. We know what it's been, but I think the curiosity lies in what you're getting back. Who will be available? I've gotten a lot of questions this week about David Long, about Rashawn Evans. Julio Jones, of course, is the biggest name and the biggest transaction, having been designating him to return to practice along with Dane Cruikshank and Racy McMath, Racy McMath has missed a considerable amount of time at this point. But Julio Jones being any kind of available at all, just to practice, matters. Now, it'll be curious to see whether he actually participates today. Clearing him and him being a participant are two different conversations. But what I thought was interesting from Mike Vrabel on Monday was when he was asked about a mental break, basically, what the bye week allows for. And I thought Mike's response was pretty interesting because it applies both to the mental and the physical elements of a now expanded 17-game regular season and a team that has dressed more players than any other NFL franchise in the last 3 decades and the only one to do it with a winning record, the other two being last year's San Francisco 49ers team, and then in 2019, the Miami Dolphins. 86 total players have put on a Titans uniform this season. It's a ridiculous amount. It's almost two rosters. But Mike, on Monday, was discussing the idea of what this break meant for the bodies that he's trying to, for lack of a better term, unbreak.
I think that that's, you know, you're frustrated when you lose. I mean, it's nope, that's not why we come to work. We come to work to prepare to win. You know, we understand the ups and downs of this league, the grind of it. You know, I didn't think that we were broken by any means. I thought we were a little bent. I thought we were a little beat up, nicked up, but not broken. There's too many good things that happened in those two losses to think that somehow we're broken, and we just have to do some things better, do them more consistently, and eliminate some of the stuff that unfortunately we've all witnessed get you beat.
So, I mean, I don't think anybody, well, I take that back. I would have accused the Titans of being physically broken before the bye. Mental, I think, is a different element. Like, I think that's an unfair characterization of where these guys were, right? Because the game plan against the Patriots, if not the Texans, was clear and obvious. Like, they had ways to beat New England. They just fumbled it by literally every person who was responsible for being a ball carrier in that game. It's not an ideal situation. So when he talks about the break being both mental and physical and not quite being a broken team, but maybe a bit of a bent one, I think everybody can resonate with that idea. But now things turn to Ryan Tannehill, because that's really the source of where you can discuss how far the Titans can go or how limited they might be. And we've seen examples of that at different times. Now, I think everybody is willing to give Ryan Tannehill a bit of grace for the amount of different players that he's had around him and the adjustments that they've had to make. But I think more than anything at this point, I think that you look at the situation for Ryan Tannehill, and you say, all right, he just needs to find ways to elevate his teammates. It is fair to say Ryan Tannehill doesn't have a lot around him right now. It is also fair to say it needs to be better. It cannot be in the area of 85 net yards passing in a loss to the Patriots, especially when you're getting the kind of production, the kind of efficiency out of your running game, where both of your running backs in that game rush for over 260 yards, I think 270 yards Nearly 300 yards of offense just from your ground game, and your passing game can't get anything. Your leading receiver in that game is Nick Westbrook-Ikhina with 25. It's untenable. So what it boils down to is all roads lead back to Ryan Tannehill and just how much further, how much more he can get out of his teammates at this point. And then what you're looking for at practice today, which is Julio Jones doing anything? Is Julio Jones participating at all? They've designated him to return. He is clear to practice. Does he practice? And what does that indicate about his future availability? That's a big question. Rashawn Evans and David Long. As I told you earlier, the Titans worked out inside linebackers this week, and they were interested in Will Compton to a degree. They didn't sign him, and it would have been a shorter-term signing, is my understanding. He had a better opportunity with the Las Vegas Raiders, and that's where he's at signing a contract today. So we're very happy for our buddy Will. I do hear they need a fill-in host for Bussin' with the Boys. I'm talking a lot right now. I don't know necessarily. I mean, there would have to be negotiations.
Is that a good fit?
Me?
Yeah, you think you could host Bussin'?
I mean, I do everything else. Why not?
Why not?
That takes a lot of brain power. Bussin' with the Boys. I've been a guest. Why can't I drive the damn thing? Now I might drive it into a ditch for funsies. But I
literally drive the bus into a ditch.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't drive. That's the problem.
That's right.
I have to get it on a
tow. You'd have to tow it into
every
a ditch.
Every time I would physically have to hire somebody to tow it, and I got well, I won't disclose where the bus is kept. There's too many loyal legion of the bus and the wolf pack? The wolves? Don't shrug at me. You know what I'm talking about. Silence doesn't help me, Lucas.
Will says yes.
Silence doesn't help me. But all of it, what you're looking for today is where are you at from a health and wellness standpoint? Do you have enough bodies to dress what used to look like the Tennessee Titans? Because the team that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, really the last month, it's just not the Titans. Like, the Titans aren't even the Titans right now. The Titans are Dontrell Hilliard off the street and Golden Tate, who remains on the practice squad, who has yet to play, but everybody made a big deal out of it, like that was going to change the dynamic of the football team. The guy can't even get active at this point. Maybe he'll be a Saturday last-minute transaction, a practice squad call-up where they can send him back down. If they choose to dress him for Sunday's game against the Jags, maybe if you're willing to experiment a little bit with Golden Tate, the Jags game would be the game to do it. The Rams didn't quite experiment, but they got off their three-game losing streak by beating the Jags, and they did it handily because the Jags are terrible. But at this point, you're looking at Ryan Tannehill and saying, all right, I understand what you're dealing with at this point. I understand you may not be physically great. Mike Vrabel, though, speaking about Ryan Tannehill on Monday, I thought was pretty telling about how they value this particular quarterback and how things – on the whole, how the picture is evaluated as a whole, not just one individual person.
Well, it's a complete thing, Gentry. It is. It's a whole package. But we all have a job, whether it's mine, it's the coordinators, the position coaches, to get guys ready to play, to find ways to win football games. And as the quarterback, that has to be the same thing. And understanding who's out there, understanding what we're trying to get done with the play, taking care of the football. But then, everybody else has a job to do as well as far as protection and making sure that we're firm in the middle of the pocket, that we're staying inside out on the edges, that we're winning, that we're identifying. So the time for evaluation is not now, but it's the time for teaching and trying to improve as we work our way here into December is probably what the most important thing is.
That's what happens when you ask. That's Mike Vrabel on Monday, by the way. That's what happens anytime you ask Mike Vrabel to reflect at any point. No, you idiots. I'm coaching a football team. I have to figure out how to beat Urban Meyer again on Sunday. Now, fortunately, that shouldn't be the toughest of tasks, but it shouldn't have been that tough against the 1-8 at the time Houston Texans, and we all saw how that experiment went down. We'll talk with Mike Keith, voice of the Titans. Be on the call on Sunday as he always is. I'm curious to know how Mike has managed learning all of the names this year, because there's still moments, and I cover them every day too. Mike's out there every day as well. There's still moments when I get to a game on Sunday, I'm trying to figure out who the hell is number 95. I have no idea who that human being is.
How many names? 86.
86. 86 of them have worn a Titans uniform at some point. It's a ridiculous amount. Mike Keith's the best, though. He probably hadn't had as hard a time with it as I have. Either way, he'll join us next.
Tannehill looks to his right, steps up. He can run this thing. 40, 45, 50, and he is taken down as he reaches the 47 of the Colts by Willis.
That is, of course, the voice of the Titans. That's Mike Keith. On a Ryan Tannehill touchdown call, Mike Keith will join us here in just a second, and we will get all the insights, the knowledge. Mike's just a calming presence, and I feel like Titans fans could use that. Coming off a bye, everybody's refreshed, everybody's rejuvenated, and so it'll be interesting to see how much further clear of the injury report or how much shorter the injury report could possibly be coming off a week away and some much-needed mental and physical rest for the Tennessee Titans. Mike doesn't seem to rest at any point. Mike's always doing something. Mike, did you get any opportunity to not work over the bye week?
I did. Got out of town a little bit.
Where'd you go?
Went to the mountains for a little getaway and enjoyed some good food, and a little hiking, and watched some football, and it was just nice, really nice.
Well, that's fantastic to hear. I'm glad you got some time away. That sounds like a lovely bi-week vacation. It feels like an eternity since the last time the Titans played a football game. It's going to be exciting to have you and Coach Mack and Amy Wells, Rhett Bryan, the whole crew back on the call. Noon kickoff on Sunday on Titans Radio and, of course, your flagship home for Titans Radio, 104.5 The Zone. Mike, how has it been any more difficult for you to learn 86 names, 86 players, 86 background stories, given the state of this roster throughout the course of the last 13 weeks?
Had a friend who was teasing me last week about it, and he said, does it feel like you've called the whole season as the preseason? And what he meant was, it's always harder for us to do the preseason based on the fact that there are 90 names. And that they're all going to play. And so once you get to the regular season, you're basically going to play the same 48 guys or, you know, 52 guys or 56 guys the whole year. And this year it's been almost like a 12-game preseason has been added with all of the additions.
Yeah.
Because you are constantly having to look down and make sure you have the right number and the right name. And, you know, we've had some guys wear the same numbers at different times. It's been a challenge. I mean, there's no question about it from the standpoint of the continuity. So if you think about how it is for me, how must it be for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel and the staff? That's what's really crazy is when John made the 13 roster moves a couple weeks ago, it took me 2 hours to sort out all of my notes and make sure that I had this guy on the team, this guy not on the team, this guy on the practice squad, this guy now on the active roster, this guy on the depth chart, so on and so forth. Again, can you imagine how that is for John Robinson and Mike Vrabel? I talked to a former pro football player yesterday who's really familiar with the game, and he said, I don't think people understand what an amazing job Mike Vrabel has done with all of these moving parts. And I think it's really true. It's been a remarkable year to cover. I'm sure it's been much more remarkable inside Baptist Sports Park.
I think it's a well-made point by you, Mike, for a great many reasons. I think objectively anybody would say that of the coaching staff and of John Robinson and his staff in the front office trying to piece this thing back together. Because the plan, when you see the plan that they bring to each game, New England, for example, they had a plan to beat the Patriots. There was a very obvious path to beating the Patriots, and the turnovers are what damn you ultimately, but the way that they've been able to get these guys on short notice as humanly possible, when they come in on a Tuesday after a workout, they're signed on a Wednesday, and they're playing on Sunday because they need bodies. You see that that's having the intended effect, and there's just some unfortunate circumstances where the margin of error is so thin that ultimately cost you those opportunities to continue to win games the way that they did at the start of the season.
That's right. And I think that's a well-made point. And I think the other part of it is it's not just guys on Tuesdays. In some cases, it's guys having to take over as starters on Thursdays and Fridays because they will get through Wednesday practice, come back into the building on Thursday, and they say, oh, so-and-so is now hurting. So when you're doing the planning on Monday and Tuesday, and you've got a guy in the plan, and then you find out on Thursday he's not going to be able to be part of the plan. I mean, that's just crazy talk. But what it comes down to for the Titans, and I think Mike Vrabel set it up very well in his press conference today, they got to get back to playing Titans football. And whatever's happened has happened. I mean, this is like a story that is completed. All of this is over. All of the injuries are over. Here you are. You're 8-4. It's a 5-game season to the end of the regular season, and then hopefully you're playing in January into February. But they've got to get it cleaned up. And if they can go back to playing Titans football, which is playing situations well, playing smarter, doing what they do, it doesn't have to be remarkable. It doesn't have to be otherworldly. It just has to be clean. And that's the point I think he's trying to get across right now with all of the stuff that has happened is in the past. At the end of the year, we're going to see statistics for the season, and we'll go back and we'll say, well, they did this. They were 23rd in the league in this, and they were third in the league in this, and so on and so forth. None of that matters right now. Right now, what matters is you've gotten to 8-4. You're more healthy than you were, and you've got to find a way to rev it up and play your best football down the stretch. And this is what we hope for before the season. We hope to be at this moment where this team could play their best football down the stretch and have a chance to do something special. There are a lot of teams that can say that. Basically half the league can say that. And now it's going to be a sprint to the finish. And the Titans are in it.
Absolutely. They're more than in it. They're the second seed in the AFC right now, and had the Bills done them a solid on Monday night, they could have been in first place again without having played a game. What matters right now is that we have Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, here with us on 104.5 The Zone. Of course, you can check Mike, our version of Mike and Mike, out on Monday nights, the Mike Vrabel Show, where the head coach takes your questions alongside Mike Keith, and on YouTube on Tuesdays, where you can watch the six-pack plays, or in this case, the six-pack plays that they need more of, moving forward in these last five games. A lot of cool stuff that Mike Keith is doing with the rest of the Titans media crew. Also, some breaking news while we're doing this. The Ravens have officially placed cornerback Marlon Humphrey on IR. His season is now over. Mike, when you watch Ryan Tannehill, what do you see right now?
I see a quarterback that doesn't have all his weapons. I see an offense that is trying to do things that's sort of outside of what they're comfortable doing because they've been behind and they've been forced into these situations. I see a team that right now in scoring 13 points in each of the last two games is not able to dictate to the defense. And I think that the Titans have to get back to doing just that. And that's dictating. You know, when they're running the ball and they're forcing you to stop the run and they're playing from in front and they're not committing silly penalties, they're able to dictate, and Tannehill is able to work on tempo, and he's able to get some bigger plays down the field and have some things happen. Right now, what's happened to the Titans offense is they've been put in a box, and being put in a box is nobody thinks they're going deep right now. And that's, if you get Julio Jones back, that game changes because people fear Julio Jones. If you get AJ Brown back for San Francisco, suddenly people fear your offense again. They've got to take a step back. They've got to defense those receivers specifically. If you're able to keep running the ball the way you did at New England, suddenly people have to respect that and defense that differently. You know, we called them four horsemen before the season, talking about Tannehill, Jones, Brown, and Henry. Right now it's just been the horse man.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to see. You know, he's having to try to do some things right now that he just doesn't have a lot of choices. Does it mean he's playing his best ball? Does it mean that he's making every throw perfectly. No, I mean, he's not. He's forced a couple things, and, you know, he's missed a couple open receivers. But in the past, you just said, ah, that's one play. Let's go back and run another one. Right now, and you said it well, the margin for error being as small as it is, you miss one opportunity, it's massive. Before, when this team was scoring 30 points a game, it's like, eh, so what? We'll get it next time. You know, that's the way you played. You played looser because you knew that opportunities would be there.
And it will be interesting to see, you know, based on whether he's able to practice today or not in Julio Jones, and now that he's been cleared to practice, still all three of the Titans' top receivers, Marcus Johnson done for the year, A.J. Brown on IR until at least the San Francisco game, and Julio Jones cleared to return but still on IR at this point. I think that's been my biggest takeaway from all of this, Mike, is that you're right. Defenses don't necessarily fear the downfield pass. The numbers would indicate that they're not, that the average depth of target for the receivers that are out there, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, Chester Rogers, at times Cody Hollister, and any of the tight ends, they're all well under 10 yards as far as average depth of target is concerned, and it takes away so much of what they're able to do. I wonder, Mike, though, what in the next five games, we don't necessarily know how well or how long Julio Jones is going to hold up. What do you need to see from Julio Jones to make this Titans passing game sustainable at a more consistent rate once again?
Need to see him on the field.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a number of catches, a number of yards, a number of touchdowns. I think it's present. Because when he's present, people are going to take notice. I don't know if he's as good as he used to be. I don't know if he's as fast as he used to be. But, you know, I do know one thing. He's Julio Jones. And if Julio Jones is out there, everybody's nervous. Because there's something that can happen at any moment with Julio Jones. If you're in the red zone, if you have third and seven, if he goes on a deep route, which we saw him catch, you know, in the Seattle game early in the year, you know, there are things that he can do. You've got to account for him. The Titans at this point, and I said this when Stephon Diggs was traded to Buffalo, it changed their whole receiving core because then suddenly everybody else moved into their natural spots. They did what they do. And with Julio Jones out there, and obviously with A.J. out there, the other guys move into their more natural spots for the Titans. They're good players. They can help you. They're NFL players. But are they game breakers? No. None of them have proven at any point in their career to be game breakers. And maybe they will someday, but you certainly can't say that right now. You've got to have game breakers in this league. Listen. This offense, you know what Tannehill needs? He needs a 70-yard touchdown pass. That's what he needs. He needs a 70-yard touchdown pass that he either throws a deep ball or he throws a cross. Somebody breaks a tackle and goes 70 yards. You know, this guy just needs a break. And I think at the moment he gets it, I think the offense has a really good chance to reignite. It is hard to drive this football down in, down out in the NFL. It is really hard to do.
Explosive plays. It's a big part of what's been missing. And outside of the playmakers themselves, what's been missing. You found a little more success with it, certainly in the running game. But then again, the turnovers, as we discussed earlier. Mike Keith, voice of the Titans, is here with us on 104.5 The Zone. With all the roster attrition, Mike, there's been, obviously, as we talked about, a lot of different names, a lot of different stories, and a lot of people who have found ways to prove themselves that they can contribute to the football team beyond when their time to start or contribute at a more frequent rate is done. Who's been the biggest success story from your perspective out of all of these guys who have been called into service for this team that's so injured?
It's a good question. I'd say Dylan Cole on defense jumps out to me because he's a guy that a lot of people really liked in Houston, and he could never stay healthy. Right now, he's healthy. Should have had a big interception in the game at New England and has made some plays. He's got a lot of speed at linebacker. Offensively, I'm going Dontrell Hilliard. The Titans wanted Darrington Evans to fill that role, the speed back who also has some decent size, you know, that 205-pound back who can catch and, you know, who can break the home run if you run a lag draw or whatever at the end of a half. Dontrell Hilliard has shown he can do that. And he has sort of filled a role that the Titans have been looking for in this offense. I think both Cole and Hilliard, if they keep doing what they do, could find themselves with a future. And that's a good part of this, though, is as these guys come back, the Titans have found some depth in spots. And that's kind of an exciting thing for the ball club. They found some help in the offensive and defensive line. They found some help at running back. They found some help at linebacker in the secondary. And now as kind of the guys work their way back in, you know, maybe they don't have to do it all. And maybe you do feel that confidence to put one of those players in as a in a key moment and feel like they can not only survive but potentially thrive.
The Jags are the opponent for the second time this season. They're coming to Nashville this time around. They themselves have their own struggles that have been well documented at this point. Mike, I'm not sure how far. I assume that you're well underway with your preparations in for this game, but the more that I watch the Jags, the more that I'm shocked that Trevor Lawrence has had one touchdown pass since Halloween at this point. And the way that, I mean, the football team around him is not great, but he doesn't seem to have any sign of relief in a way that a lot of these players for the Titans have gotten from the way that the plans have been executed and the plans have been put in place for them to maximize their talent. What do you see from this Jags team?
I see a lot of what's going on with Tannehill right now for Trevor Lawrence. You know, DJ Chark is gone and has been gone, and they don't have the receiver that you fear on the deep route. Although I like Chenault, and he can break a tackle and make things happen. He's not the same type of guy that Chark is. And, you know, they really thought that ETN was going to be the back who was a compliment to Robinson, who gave them more versatility, particularly being able to swing the ball out to him in open spaces and have him, you know, take off and run a long way. And then they get this Dan Arnold from Carolina, and he becomes their number one receiver at tight end, and now he's out. So all of that has really stacked up against Lawrence. And then he's having some rookie struggles. You know, I think if Daniel Jones, or Mac Jones, I should say, were in Jacksonville, and not in New England, he would be having the same problem.
Sure.
Because when you don't have weapons, I mean, we could sit and talk about scheme and, oh, coach this and, oh, but it's about players. I mean, schemes are great when you have players. And that's the whole thing, is he doesn't have enough around him. Now, there are things that they can do and things that they can do well on offense if their defense continues to keep them in games. The defense is pretty good, Buck. I mean, they really have done a nice job. When you're playing defense for a team that's only averaging 15 points a game, that's a tough load. And yet, they've done pretty well in several opportunities. They certainly did it to Buffalo. And that's the part of it that the Titans are going to have to be concerned in, is you don't want to get in a rock-throwing contest with these guys at 13-10. Because if you do, you play into their game. What you want to do is you want to go in and jump on these guys and get ahead 14-0. And then you change what they're able to do offensively and defensively.
It was certainly the case when last these two teams played each other, Kevin Byard getting on top of them early with that fumble recovery for a touchdown, and then the Titans never trailed in that game, even though there were points when the Jags made them sweat it out a little more than I think.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they played a pretty good ball game, but the key to that ball game was at the key moments, the Titans executed flawlessly. The end of the first half, they go down and score. Jacksonville comes down, tries a long field goal, misses. Titans work their way down the field, get a extra field goal, and then get the ball to start the second half and start with the touchdown. And so that game changed philosophically, and then the goal line stand, taking the ball back down the field a couple series later and putting it away. You know, those were the things That, to Mike Vrabel, is Titans football. Executing the situations. They didn't play great against Jacksonville. Really didn't. Jacksonville rushed for, what, 198 in that game?
Yeah.
And Trevor Lawrence was effective, and, you know, they scored 19 points. They should have had more. But the difference in the game was execution at key moments. Jacksonville failed, and the Titans succeeded.
It'll be a lot of fun. Mike Keith, of course, will be on the call coverage, Titans countdown. Anyway, Rhett Bryan, Amy Wells at 11 o'clock. Mike Keith, Coach Mack, have you up at kickoff and through the game itself between the Titans and Jags at Nissan Stadium. Mike, it's always a pleasure to have you on, the Hall of Famer. You're the best, buddy, and I'll see you in the booth on Sunday.
Thank you, Buck. Appreciate you having me.
Mike Keith, the best in the business, our guest here on 104.5 The Zone. It's going to be a lot of different elements to dissect both before and after this game. This is the kind of litmus test that we talked about pre-Texans, and you saw how the result of that kind of told you where the Titans were at that particular point in time. But in those four or five game-changing plays, when the execution is what matters most on either side, that's what we need to see from the Titans again, in a way that through eight wins and not in four losses, they have proven to us that they're going to be able to do if they have the correct pieces in place. We'll wrap the show up. Polls next. Finish strong, baby. Great effort, great energy. Been a fun one today. If you missed any of the show, we got a podcast. It's a pretty good one. I mean, I think the radio show is pretty good too, but if you don't have time, you want to listen to it on your schedule, we got you. You can check it out, The Buck Rising Show, in your favorite podcast app. Mike Keith, great as always. Any of our guests. Diana Rossini, going to be on the radio show tomorrow, and we're going to have Roger Saffold, Titans guard, on Friday. So we're looking forward to catching up with both of them. It's been a minute. I don't think we've had Diana on since before she went on maternity leave. It's been at least 6 months. So we'll do that. Looking forward to having Queen Diana back in the mix. Before we do polls, we are going to reschedule our TN High School Football Hero.
Yeah, we'll hang out with Jordan James tomorrow, 10:45.
Okay. So we'll have, it's a loaded show rest of the week. It's crazy. Week's almost over, which makes me very happy. It means we've been having a lot of fun. So we hope you have as well. Let's do some polls.
Not now, Jenny. I'm on the radio. Buck Rising gave me a job. Said something about a poll update. Hope that wasn't at that club where you became a folk singer. Anyway, Buck Rising's producer and correspondent has the final poll update. I'm not a smart man, but I know who Lucas Panzeca is.
What is the worst? Oh, wait a minute.
I like that. I like the Forrest Gump music. I hope that something about that Forrest Gump impression makes me think that Rhett's going to get canceled every time. So I hope that one. I don't know why I fear that one more than any of them. But I do.
The worst Tennessee athletic performance that you've ever seen. Jackie says there are many. Nathan Peterman in the swamp is up there. That is statistically the worst performance by a quarterback in Tennessee history.
Man, the Peterman is still out here getting NFL jobs.
Respect.
Peterman cannot be deterred.
Respect. Sam Smith brings up that 2012 Georgetown 37-36 win over Tennessee. Brian Lynch says 2008 football game at Auburn. That was a 14-12 loss that I remember well, but I would see that game and raise you the 2008 loss to Wyoming 13-7 at home, of which Ramon Foster remembers very well. That was his nomination. He was on the sideline and on the field for that game. Told me it was a very bleak environment on the Tennessee sideline on that day.
Bleak is a good description to assign to a lot of these things, because I mean, has anybody brought up Georgia State?
I was about to read Georgia State as a submission, yes.
Because, like, I could pick out three Jeremy Pruitt-coached games alone and say that's the worst thing that I've seen a UT athletics program put on the field. Georgia State is one of them. I did halftime and post-game analysis with Jonathan Crompton of the Arkansas game.
Yes, Crompton.
Unholy disaster.
Crompton, unfortunately, was another part of the cast of characters in that 2008 loss to Wyoming.
Yeah, well, Crompton had, to ask Jonathan Crompton that question might elicit some responses that, you know, may need only be addressed in therapy.
That one really sticks out because it was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak, on Phil Fulmer getting fired. Was 2008 loss to Wyoming. Yeah,
some really bad stuff in there. Dooley losing to a wide receiver, a quarterback, mm-hmm. though, lives in the pantheon of bad ball performances.
A name that I cannot say on FCC radio submits the 41 loss at home against UGA in 2017, by far the worst game I've witnessed, where they rolled out Checker Neyland, the Smoky Grays, the whole nine yards, SEC on CBS, 41-0.
It must have been very bad if you stuttered and stammered over that name that you couldn't read on live radio.
Can't read it. Same season, 2017, 17-13 win over winless UMass. That one was rough.
UMass. Oh, God.
Moving on.
They had Tajay Sharp. UMass has had some pros, but apparently, you know.
Not recently.
Not recently.
By the way, Indiana has hired former UMass head coach Walt Bell, Middle Tennessee native, as their offensive coordinator.
This is the second time you've tried to shove Walt Bell.
Oh, it's topical.
I don't care. It's basketball season. A girl has no football program, all right? Keep it moving.
Who will be the first NFL head coach to get fired? 68% say Matt Nagy, which is probably the correct answer, right?
Send Matt Nagy into the sun, man.
20% say it's Urban, 11%. Or I'm sorry, 20% say Zimmer, 11% say Urban.
See, the Urban thing is interesting because, like, for Urban to be one and done would have to be, like, a self-assessment of Urban being like, all right, I'm not right for this job, which would never happen because he's an ego monster. This would take somebody of Urban Meyer's – I mean, he's a Hall of Fame college football coach, and he's done the thing which – you hope that, well, I mean, in the case of Urban Meyer, you don't necessarily root for the person that is Urban Meyer. But, like, when you have these great figures in sports, you don't want to see them continue on past their peak or so far past their peak that they become an anchor. And that's exactly what Urban Meyer is at this point. But for him to be one and done, I mean, that would take some self-assessment that I think Urban Meyer at this point in his life is not capable.
Did anybody think Urban Meyer was going to be successful in Jacksonville? I don't remember that hire being praised at any point by anybody.
No, I don't think anybody thought it was a good idea. One, because it's the Jags and that organization has made some just terrible decisions. And from what I know some people that work for the Jags and they don't describe it as a terribly healthy work environment. And that was pre-Urban Meyer. So I think that there was a lot of reasons why this was it's an easy move to pan. I don't think anybody got on the hill of, no, this is going to be great. They're going to figure it out. But I don't think anybody would have said it would have gone this bad.
I mean, Nick Saban couldn't do it, the jump from college football to NFL at a high level. Steve Spurrier wasn't able to do it. Why would Urban Meyer be able to do it?
I mean, the Saban conversation is totally different if he's got Drew Brees as his quarterback.
Like, that's a good point.
I don't want to say that Nick Saban couldn't do it. Nick Saban could probably figure out a way to do it.
Which conference has more Super Bowl contenders? 55% go with the AFC, 45% NFC.
Now we'll have that conversation tomorrow with Diana. It was a good topic that Lucas brought up today that we didn't have time to address, so we'll do that tomorrow with Diana Rossini. Those are polls?
Those are the polls.
Very good. It's a lot of fun. You're going to continue to have fun the rest of the afternoon. Ron Slay on 3HL. I'm sure he's going to have the same kind of energy because Ron Slay has had his midday nap, I'm sure. So he was great with us. He'll be great with them. And in the meantime, you got Blaine and Mickey to keep you entertained. They'll do a great job coming up next.